case this morning is Gill against Ashcroft.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Susan Campanile on behalf of the petitioner Rayford Gill. Mr. Gill, a lawful permanent resident of the United States and a native and citizen of Belize, is before this court asking you to find that his disposition under the Illinois First Offender Statute is not a conviction within the meaning of the immigration laws. At the heart of this case are two federal statutes. On the one hand, the Federal First Offender Act, first passed in 1970, on the other hand, the definition of conviction, developed in case law and put into the Immigration and Nationality Act in 1996 with the legislation known as IRA-IRA, the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act. The Federal First Offender Act allows certain first-time drug offenders, possessors of small amounts of a controlled substance, to escape all of the disqualifications and disabilities that normally flow from a crime. The Illinois statute, known as Section 1410, is an exact analog in that it also allows first-time possessors of small amounts of controlled substances to escape all of the disqualifications and disabilities that normally flow from conviction of a crime. A first offender disposition, either under federal law or state law, is a creature entirely different than the various other state ameliorative approaches to non-first offender dispositions. Adjudications and dispositions call things like annulment, conditional discharge, expungement, supervision, deferred adjudication. And the board has recognized this. As long as the FFOA has been around, board jurisprudence has analyzed first offender dispositions, either under the Federal Act or a state analog, on a track completely separate and apart from its jurisprudence on what constitutes a conviction for non-first offender dispositions. The board never, in almost 30 years of case law, and from the other go down in 1999, upon which the decision in Mr. Gill's case...
If I understand things correctly, I may not have a good grasp on it, but it looked to me like what was happening was that before 1996, the board applied this federal statute, 3607A, by analogy to state convictions, even though it didn't apply directly, because 3607A deals only with federal convictions. And then after 1996, it says it's no longer appropriate to apply anything by analogy, because now we have a statute directly reading on what is a conviction for immigration purposes. Is that correct understanding of what the board is doing?
I don't think the board has been so clear, because the board has never said what a disposition under the federal statute itself, what result that would entail. The board has never said whether a disposition under the FFOA itself would be a conviction or wouldn't be a conviction. And if it is not a conviction, if a disposition under the FFOA itself continues to not be a conviction, then the government has to answer the question, why are state analogs all of a sudden being treated differently? If a first offender adjudication...
I don't know why that's important, unless you're arguing that the 1996 Act is unconstitutional as depriving people of equal protection or something like that? It seems to me entirely rational for Congress to say, we have our own rules on what are convictions. States have zillions of rules. So we're going to have a uniform rule on what is a conviction when we're looking at a state conviction, when we're looking at a state document.
But there's no evidence that that's what Congress meant to do. Congress, when it passed the definition of conviction,
there's actually rarely any evidence about what Congress means, but we know what it said.
Well, in this case, there's legislative history that indicates what Congress meant to do was amend AFCAC,
Maybe I went about this in the wrong way. Is there any doubt that applying 1101A48A, what Illinois did is a conviction for purposes as the definition of 848A works.
Yes, there is doubt. Our position is that the Illinois First Offender Statute, a disposition under the Illinois statute is not a conviction under 101A48. And the reason for this...
What's the textual argument for that?
The textual argument for that is that when Congress passed 101A48, it did not intend...
No. Textual. Get mental states out of your head. Right? Use the text of the statute on one hand and what Illinois did on the other. What's the argument that it is not a conviction?
The text of the statute... Well, one must look at the text of the FFOA and the text of the Illinois statute and try to reconcile that with the text of 101A48A. And to do that, one must look at the almost 30 years of board jurisprudence leading up to 101A48.
Just asking you whether there's an argument looking at 1101A48A and comparing that to what Illinois did, right?
101A48A would seem to be on its face to cover first offender dispositions, but for the language in the other statutes. And one must try to reconcile the language in the two competing statutes.
The problem, though, is Section A says it's a conviction if adjudication of guilt has been withheld, where the alien has entered a plea of guilty and the judge has ordered some form of punishment. Your client falls into that.
But since we're in
by the direct language of the statute.
Our argument is that one must look also in analyzing this statute at the text of the Federal First Offender Act. And if
right.
But your client is not convicted
under that statute.
Because
your client has a state conviction.
Because
the fact that this would not be a conviction for purposes of a statute under which your client was never charged, I don't get it.
Judge Easterbrook, if I might explain. Because if a disposition under the Federal First Offender Act is not a conviction, which we hold it is not, and I believe if pressed, the government would say the same thing, then the board must give equal treatment to state analogs, and this is because the board, well, subsequent to 101A48 being enacted, the board did so in the case matter of Devison. The board has a history of giving state analogs same treatment.
I understand that. That was the board's rule before 1996. That's why I asked if I correctly understood what was going on. Before 1996, there's no federal statutory definition of conviction for immigration law. The board asks, how would we treat this if it were a federal conviction? But now, there is a definition of conviction in the immigration laws, and one would think the right question is, how is it treated under that definition? A common law approach has been replaced by a statutory approach.
To answer that question, one must look at matter of Devison, a board case decided in 2001, where the board said, a New York state statute is, we're not going to consider that to be a conviction because we're not considering the federal law to be a conviction. So it's clear that the board is carrying over its jurisprudence, giving state analogs the same treatment as it gives federal statutes in matter of Devison. To hold differently, to hold that an offender under the Federal Act is not convicted, where an offender given the same exact treatment under a state law is convicted, would lead to unequal treatment under the immigration laws and is a violation of equal protection. It does have a constitutional problem.
It's actually quite common, by the way. There are all sorts of federal statutes that turn on whether somebody is convicted. The felon in possession statute is a very good example. And there's a federal statute which says that for that purpose, whether something is a conviction depends entirely on state law, unless it's a federal conviction. And that leads, of course, to the fact that some states automatically restore the right to carry firearms or something like that. And it means that there are about 50 different state definitions of conviction, and a completely different definition of conviction if your prior is a federal offense, because there's no similar federal program. So it's not unusual or weird or odd to have one definition of conviction for federal convictions and a different one for state convictions, turns out to be quite normal.
Except that the board has never adopted this approach. Pre-96 or post-96, the board has always given state analogs the same effect and continues to do so post-1996. Again, in matter of Jefferson decided in 2001, again, analyzing Section 101A48.
Isn't this argument that you're making something that Congress should really consider when they look at the conflicts between the statutory definition, the Illinois statutory definition, and the Federal First Offender Act definition, and the definition that we're acting under here? Isn't it a matter for Congress to resolve?
Well, our position is that Congress never intended to overturn the First Offender jurisprudence. The legislative history mentions ASCAC, ASCAC, ASCAC. It's clear that Congress is upset with the third prong of ASCAC, and that's what's driving its codification of conviction. It doesn't once mention matter of Manrique. It doesn't once mention first offender adjudications. First offender adjudications were not convictions under ASCAC. There is no rational explanation why there should be convictions now under what is nothing more than an amended ASCAC.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Mai. Before we get into the merits, let me ask you who you were representing. Is the Attorney General the right respondent in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. This case is also governed by the permanent rules of judicial review, so therefore the proper respondent would be the Attorney General. May it please the Court, my name is Anne Timmy. I represent the United States. The issue here is simple. The question for the Court to resolve is whether the petitioner was convicted for immigration purposes. The Immigration and Nationality Act clearly says yes. Mr. Gill's guilty plea and his sentence of probation fall within the meaning of 101A48A. There is no exception for it. Petitioner suggests that there is some sort of exception that is implicit within that definition. However, that's completely contrary to the Supreme Court findings in Dickerson, which was acknowledged and applied by this court in U.S. v. McAllister. The assumption is that there is no federal law that is dependent upon state law. That would be contrary to the policy and purpose of this Immigration Nationality Act provision, which was that there be a uniform definition. If we were to state that the definition would have to be dependent upon the vagaries of state law, there would be various inconsistencies rather than uniformity. The first question, therefore, for this court to address in terms of a statutory construction issue is...
Pardon me, you know, vagaries are hardly unusual in immigration law. There's a federal statute that says that whether you get particular benefits depends on whether you're married, and another federal statute that says that whether you're married depends on state law.
Yes, Your Honor, but that is also where Congress has clearly stated its intent that there be a dependency on state law, and that's perfectly appropriate. And this court has said that if Congress has...
Actually, that has been challenged as unconstitutional on the ground that it's not uniform.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the Supreme Court in Dickerson and this court has acknowledged that if Congress has the authority to do so because of its plenary power over immigration issues. And unless there's any clear intent, if Congress has stated that the federal issue must be dictated by a federal definition, then you apply that. You don't apply any kind of state law and make the federal law dependent upon it. This is what petitioner is contending. And in fact, in order to even get to the issue that petitioner has asserted, this court would have to manufacture various issues and facts which are not present here. The Federal First Offender Act, in order to make any kind of exception based on that provision, would require that this court first deal with a federal first offender. We don't have one here. We have a state drug offender. The court should also note that the board has not addressed the issue of whether a federal first offender would be exempted under this conviction provision. In such a case, that's something that we should not have to address. In fact, the 11th Circuit and Fernandez Bernal in order to even address the outlet's issue of the equal protection violation had to make certain assumptions. Those two points, that being that there was a federal first offender and that there was some sort of exception, and then on top of it, that exception required that it be applied to state drug offenders identically, were assumptions that are not raised by this case, assumptions that cannot be made in this case and should not be, consistent with this court's decisions in applying the Supreme Court analysis. The first question again is the statute clear? The plain language is the clearest, most reliable indicator, as this court has stated, and the language allows for no exception for a state drug offender like petitioner. Therefore, in order to make his argument valid, this court has to make a determination that there is some ambiguity. There is none, and this court should apply the holdings in the First, Second, and Fifth Circuits, where in construing the definition of conviction, even though they applied it to a slightly different fact scenario, the premise of the findings was on 101 and 48.
Sorry, what's the Fifth Circuit case you have in mind? I've got the First and the Seventh. First and the Second. Which one was the Fifth Circuit case?
Your Honor, that would be, it's a recent decision of Ray. Let me see. That would be, well, Musa was a Fifth Circuit decision that suggested that there were some plain, that there was a plain language analysis. However, there's also a recent Fifth Circuit decision. If the court would give me a moment, then I could find it. However, I know there's a recent one that I intended to send a 28-J letter to the court to advise the court of it because it was something I had only come across yesterday night. In any event, that court decision does specifically state that the language is clear. And that is why this court doesn't have to go any further in its analysis. But even if it were to do so, then it would again have to look at the legislative intent and the committee reports and the related provisions of the 1996 Act when considered as a whole, established that Congress clearly intended that a conviction stand if there is a finding of guilt and there is some sort of punishment. There's nothing else that should be considered. It clearly stated that the definition should not be dictated by rehabilitative provisions. And indeed, this recent Fifth Circuit decision also stated that if you look at other related provisions, Congress knows how to create some sort of exception. In Section 1227A2A5, there is a provision that states that there won't be certain immigration consequences if a person has been given an executive or a gubernatorial pardon.
Let me switch the focus just slightly, if I may.
Yes, sir.
The board's decision in Manrique, was it correct when it was issued?
Your Honor, it was correct in the sense that it was a policy consideration that the board decided to apply at that time.
Was it an interpretation of a federal statute?
No, Your Honor. There was no federal definition of a conviction prior to 1996. And the board, in matter of role, and said specifically all its prior decisions based on policy considerations were no longer valid in light of Congress's clear intent in the statute.
If I may again switch the focus a bit, in your brief you rely very heavily on the Chevron case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the Chevron case applicable after the Meade case to this situation?
I'm sorry?
After the Meade case in the Supreme Court. Is Chevron really an authority you can rely on?
Your Honor, it's never been overturned. I'm not quite certain. I'm familiar with the...
Well, arguably that limited the scope of Chevron to situations where an agency publishes rules after an adequate notice and hearing. That's not the situation here.
Your Honor, there is still, as far as the application of an administrative construction of a statute, I believe that it wasn't limited by that Supreme Court decision. However,
there's still some deference required, but it's whether it's Chevron deference is another question.
Yes, Your Honor, but in any event, regardless of whether or not that is the case, the court must still make an assessment as to what Congress's intent was. And the court has stated in McAllister, and the Supreme Court did say in Dickinson, which has not been overturned, that if Congress has clearly expressed its intent...
I understand. My only problem is I wonder if your agency is fishing for a decision from this court that might give you more deference in other situations than you have a right to.
Your Honor, we're not fishing for such deference at all. The agency is entitled to give a deference, but here it's a matter of statutory construction. And when we look at issues of statutory construction, it's uncontroverted that one must first look at Congress's intent. And here, you don't even need to necessarily look at how the board construed it. You need to only look at the language that Congress had used. And the language does not provide for any type of exception. And the decision on which petitioner relies, matter of Everson, in that decision, the board specifically explained why it was a completely different scenario. There was not the same kind of problem, nor the same issue that's presented in this case. We're dealing here with a matter where nowhere else in the statute is there any suggestion that there is an exception for first-time state drug offenders. And to the extent that Your Honor is concerned about any kind of deference accorded to the board's analysis, the analysis only comes into play if the court finds Congress didn't have a clear intent. There's many different paths for the court to consider in reaching a determination as to whether or not there is conviction. There's a straight line path, finding that Congress was clear in its intent to establish a uniform definition, and there's a myriad of paths that petitioner has proposed. However, regardless of that path,
thank you, Kim.
You have to determine it is clear. Thank you.
Ms. Campino, we asked you a lot of questions, so I'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you. Good. I would like to emphasize that we do have two competing statutes here. We have the definition of conviction, and we have the Federal First Offender Act.
It doesn't apply to your client who does not have a federal conviction.
Counsel, if I might go one step further, counsel concedes that a disposition under the Federal First Offender Act might not be a conviction. The board in Brevison found that a federal statute also led to the conclusion that a state statute should not be a conviction. Even though there's no explicit exception in 101A48 for juvenile dispositions, yet the board found that because the federal statute impelled such a result, a disposition under the state statute impelled the same result. There's really no reason to get a different conclusion here. If one concludes that the Federal First Offender Act is not a conviction, then under Manuel Davison, one must take the next step and find that a state disposition must be given the same effect.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until next week.